All right, welcome in, everybody. It is Jaguars Today live at Everbank. MD Fat Tony here with you as Fat Tony. Maybe the Open today, a prelude to a defensive battle for the United States of America.
I was going to say I'm here every day. You don't have to welcome me back.
Did I welcome you back?
Welcome back, Tony. That's how it ended.
I think I say, however the case may be, don't point out all my misspeaks, please.
Yeah, it's going to be defense.
Defense, defense, defense. What about Josie, the Josie factor?
I don't know. Well, I talked about this last night a little bit on my show. Soccer is cruel.
The Fat Tony Show, Monday nights.
Yeah, soccer is cruel in that you get three subs. I mean, and that's it. You get three subs and that's it. It doesn't matter injury.
She's a cruel mistress.
It doesn't matter injury. None of that matters. So if you use the three subs, say that you put Josie Altidore in at the end of the game and you have to sub him out because he can't go more than 15 minutes.
But we're told he's fine. He's fine. He's good to go.
He may or may not be. They may be playing some mind games. But if you put him in and you have to use two subs to replace him, look, Costa Rica was in this situation where they had used all three subs and their goalie went down, and they weren't sure if he was going to be able to continue playing. You don't get to put another goalie in the game. If you've used all three subs, you're done. You have to have somebody else on your team put on the gloves. It is cruel, and that's why it's important to use your subs at the right time. I'm not sure that Team USA has the flexibility today, even with Josie being back and potentially available to them, that they can actually use him because of what it would mean to have to use two to get him off the field.
A, have a tougher goalie, okay? and two, suck it up, Josie, and go for as long as you can today.
Yeah, if the hamstring pops, there's nothing he can do.
If that's what I said. If the hamstring goes as long as you can. You can't sub him in late in the game. Because if you wait and you sub him in, you're subbing him in for offense, right? That's what he is. He's a striker. So are you going to put him in a position if you're down a goal and you put Josie Altidore must score a goal in the next 10 minutes of play?
And then he'd have to play another half hour.
Potentially.
Yeah.
I think you start him, Tony, and if you get a one-goal lead, maybe, and he's laboring a little bit, you pull him and you go into a shell the rest of the way. That is my soccer 101 for all of you out there today.
My guess is we don't see Josie Altidore.
What? Americans don't lie. They said Josie Altidore is ready
to
go.
Well, our coach is not American.
Exactly. My next point. So
our coach is complaining about the language of the official. Our coach, he's a veteran wily guy.
He is a wily guy.
Now, he knows exactly what to do on this stage. From a World Cup perspective, I don't think Americans understand everything that he does, but from a World Cup perspective, he gets it, man.
Well, you know, I don't think it has a negative impact on those referees because apparently they don't understand a word he said.
That's right.
So who cares? Say whatever you like about the referees.
You can scream at them in German.
As far as that goes, I don't know, man. You are... once again, sporting your number 10, United States of America.
Yeah.
Is that, what would you call that, a warm-up polo?
No, it's just a T-shirt. It's one of those T-shirt jerseys.
It's a T-shirt jersey.
Yeah. It's got Donovan on the back. It's my Landon Donovan shirt.
At this point, if Josie Altidore doesn't play today and they get eliminated, is Jurgen Klinsmann going to get crushed for not going the Landon Donovan route? Or was that
no.
By the way, I don't think ever going to happen. Because Landon Donovan, I don't think he would have given him the satisfaction. That's the way Jurgen Klinsmann strikes me, that he would not have done it, even if it was the best thing to do. He felt like he had figured out the best thing for the United States of America's team, and that included leaving Landon Donovan off. I don't think he would have reversed course, even in the face of injury.
Whatever's going on with Donovan and Klinsmann, I think it's personal between the two guys. I don't think it's all about soccer, because, look, Klinsmann can't look Donovan or any American in the eye and say he's not one of the 23 best players in this country. He can't do it. Donovan clearly is one of the 23 best soccer players in this country, but he's not a part of this team, and they got out of the group of death. I mean, seriously, they got out of the group of death. That's all that you could expect out of this team. Anything from here is just icing on the cake.
Doesn't matter then. The outcome today does not matter.
It's not that it doesn't matter. It's that the whole Donovan thing is dead because the decision that Jurgen Klinsmann made, they got out of the group with the decisions that Jurgen made as a coach.
If you go in today, and you could have had Landon Donovan on this roster if you declared Josie Altidore not fit to play because of the injury that occurred during the World Cup.
Well, they could have had
him
for the last two games too. But
I understand that, but you could have had him working up towards having his conditioning ready to go and play, and maybe he would have played a little bit versus Germany. Maybe he wouldn't have. I'm just saying that
the conversation about Donovan was about if this team shows up at the World Cup leaving Donovan off the roster and they fall completely on their face, then Klinsmann has something to answer for. And if they show up and they play well and they get out of group, then you can't question Klinsmann on that move.
Oh, sure, you can question anybody you like. You can question if Jozy Altidore plays 10 minutes today and his hamstring goes out and you don't have a suitable replacement that can score off the bench, whether or not he should have made that move after the first game of the World Cup. But that's way too inside the business as far as I'm concerned. You know what? Put it this way. If they go out to Belgium today, hats off to a good run. And I'm not going to be breaking down too much going forward whether
we
or not
conquered the group
Landon
death.
Donovan should have been on a plane.
Like, today is, like, last week on Thursday,
By the way, we did not conquer the group of death.
No, we did, because we're out.
No, they escaped the group of death. Germany conquered the group of death. Conquered. There's still something called winning
conquered.
And losing in the United States of America, Tony.
Considering we were considered the fourth of four teams in that group. Seriously, we were the fourth
doesn't
of four
doesn't matter,
teams
we didn't win
group.
The group. We survived.
We got out.
We survived.
That's
right.
All it's about.
No, it's not. It's all it's about. Would you rather play Algeria or Belgium?
Belgium. Honestly, the way that they were playing in this tournament, yes, Belgium.
You're so full.
Did you see the way?
Belgium has won every game. Every game. So
they've led for 20 minutes, and they're going to be playing without possibly three of their biggest stars today when they go up against the U.S. Did you see the way Algeria played Germany yesterday?
Did they win?
No,
they did not.
No, they didn't, but they took it to that German team. Germany would have beat Belgium 2-3-0.
You don't know that.
I am confident that they
would. I'm confident they would have lost 5-0. Myself.
They got the better matchup here with the way the two teams are playing right now.
You're way too angry about
the situation.
I'm not
angry.
You're
I'm excited. Today
you're a little
is,
angry.
I'm
mildly looking forward to watching the game, put it that way. I can't claim to be all that excited, to be honest with you. Just the way it is. I'm not going to rain on anybody else's parade. Catch the game on 92.5 FM.
Yeah, man.
If you're not going to be in front of your television, and if you're not, you're just not a patriotic American to begin with. Anyway, I will be watching the game, and I'll be rooting them on. And if they win, fantastic. If they lose, I will continue on with my normal life without so much as a ripple. Probably.
Well, there'll be a ripple. Today is like happy.
No, there'll be a ripple in your life.
Today is like happy, nervous energy. This is fun. Like
your knee is going up and down
right
now.
It is. Today is fun. Last Thursday was awful. That
all
was
right.
Just awful.
We got to take a break. We got Mike Florio coming up. I haven't talked to him in a while.
That'll
from
be
ProFootballTalk.com.
I haven't talked to him since the Super Bowl.
I think you're right. Super Bowl week is the last time we had a chat with Mike, at least on the air. So we'll have that coming up for you today. We'll take a look back at some things going on around the National Football League, including Maurice Jones-Drew making some more headlines out in Oakland, the former Jacksonville Jaguar. Your question of the day is not really a question. It's a plea to you today on social media at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Lauren on Twitter. Give us your best pro-USA anti-Belgium smack talk if you want a chance to win a Jaguars Today t-shirt. That's kind of the theme of the day as well at facebook.com/Jaguars Today, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, which asks fans daily what drives you. All right, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you live at Everbank. We'll come back. Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, going to get us kicked off next on Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, Jaguars Today live at Everbank Field. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. You'll get the United States men's national team whipping up on Belgium today at 4 o'clock.
Mike better? Florio's got the fever.
I bet he does. Does he have soccer fever? Let's find out. Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, PFT Live. Mike, give us the current resume, by the way. You've got so many things that are offshoots of what you do at Pro Football Talk. Give us the full resume of Mike Florio as of today, July 1st.
Well, you know what? And today, July 1st, 2014, is the five-year anniversary of our association with NBC.
Congrats.
I'd like to say I was already thinking of that, but I hear July 1, and I think, hey, it's another year with NBC. Five in the books, at least four more under contract, and who knows how long beyond that. But we've got PFT Live, the web show that is on at noon Eastern every day at ProFootballTalk.com and NBCSports.com. We've got Pro Football Talk, the TV show, NBCSN, weekdays at 5:30 p.m. Eastern time. I do radio spots all across the country. Sit in for Dan Patrick from time to time, although I'm probably not supposed to mention that on your air.
It's okay. We're aware of his existence.
Okay, good. We acknowledge that Dan Patrick exists, and that from time to time I'll tell you what, that's the thing. Hosting a radio show, I enjoy that, but my gosh, that is the hardest aspect, because to make it look easy requires a lot of hard work and a lot of mental dexterity and the ability to process information, have questions ready, change your question on the fly, listen to what the person is saying so you're actually having a meaningful conversation and not just spewing whatever preordained question you bring to the table, being mindful of the clock, being mindful of the live reads, being mindful of this, mindful. You're in the middle of a tornado of activity, and you have to make everything seem perfectly calm.
I hope Lauren recorded all that so I can play that back for my wife and others who think my two-hour workday is not grueling, because it's, you made it sound really good, Mike. I may hire you to be my agent somewhere down the line.
It's true. I mean, I've lived it. I've lived it. And the thing is, the better you are at it, the more effortless it seems.
Well, I haven't gotten to that point yet. But let's move on, Michael. Before we get to the National Football League, have you caught World Cup fever? Or are you tolerating it? Are you enjoying it? Where are you on that?
I initially intended to completely resist it. I've got no interest in soccer. The game moves too slowly. At points, it looks like a bunch of kids hanging out on the grass field by the admin building playing hacky sack. There's no urgency. They're just kicking the ball around. And also, I've just got a little pet peeve about not knowing when a game is going to end. I mean, what's the old Yogi Berra saying? It ain't over till it's over, and we don't know that it's over until one guy tells us that it's over. I don't like that. I don't like not knowing when a game's going to end. But I have noticed that my national pride has taken over. I mean, once you attach USA to it, we'll pay attention to anything. If there is any little ounce of national pride to be squeezed out of the event, we eventually will get caught up in it. It's a shared experience. I get that. And I have noticed that the play seems to have a greater degree of urgency. There's less of the hacky sack routine in the round of 16. So it's a little more compelling now that, you know, you only win by winning. You can't win by losing and all that other stuff we dealt with last week.
All right, let's move on to the football we care more about here in the States, the National Football League. Mike, let's start here in the AFC South. Andre Johnson withholding his services all throughout the summer from the Houston Texans. Where does this go? Does Andre Johnson, you think, incur the penalties that will come with missing training camp? Does he carry this into the regular season? What is a resolution, do you think, would make him happy?
Well, my good buddy John McClain of the Houston Chronicle, who knows that team as well as anyone, is convinced that Andre Johnson is going to show up. I don't have an easy time reconciling Johnson showing up with why he stayed away from the entire offseason, especially since staying away from the offseason caused him to squander his eligibility for a $1 million roster bonus that would have been due at the start of the regular season. McClain thinks that Johnson is concerned about his contract next year, that there's no guarantee going into next year. There's no reason for him to think he won't be cut after this season, so he's hoping for some sort of adjustment to his contract to get some sort of security moving forward. I don't know what the case is. My understanding was the guy just wants out of Houston. And if he just wants out of Houston, what do? You stay away from training camp, you rack up $30,000 a day in fines, you start racking up potential bonus forfeiture, or you just retire. You don't rack up fines for missing training camp, but you potentially have to give back more than $8 million in bonus money that was previously paid. So I don't know what Johnson really is trying to do here. I've been told by sources close to him he's committed to his position. His position seems to be, I no longer want to play for this crappy team, not I'm concerned about my money in 2015, so we'll see how it all plays out.
Mike, one of the biggest stories of this offseason will have its resolution on Thursday with Jimmy Graham. How do you think this whole thing plays out?
Well, it won't be resolved on Thursday. It will be initially ruled upon by an arbitrator on Thursday, but whoever loses is going to appeal. And the appeal process, by the way that the dates and the deadlines are laid out in the collective bargaining agreement, there's no way it's going to be done by July 15. July 15 is the deadline for doing a long-term deal. And if you don't do a long-term deal between Graham and the Saints, if you're a franchise player, all franchise players have to get a long-term deal done by July 15, or they can only sign a one-year contract. If they don't get a long-term deal done by July 15, then it all does come down to the appeal. And there is a way to ask the three-person appeal panel to expedite the process. But if Graham loses, I don't know that they're going to say to Graham, sure, we'll rush to get this done, because Graham waited until April 20 or thereabouts to file his grievance. If he'd have filed it right out of the gates, it would already be done now. There'd be a ruling. The appeal would be over, and we would know whether or not he's going to make $7 million or $12.3 million under the franchise tag this year. And, of course, $7 million if he's a tight end, $12.3 million if he's a receiver, and all sorts of potential wrinkles coming off of that, not the least of which is Coach Sean Payton testified in the hearing in support of the position that Graham is a tight end, which means, in a roundabout way, Payton trying to keep $5.3 million out of Graham's pocket.
If the decision goes Graham's way, though, do you think the pressure is on the Saints to get a long-term deal done, even in this 2 weeks during an appeal process?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the pressure's on the Saints anyway to get a long-term deal done, and this is the way the Saints do business. Now, right or wrong, when you have a star player who becomes a free agent and you use the franchise tag, the Saints wait until the last minute to do a long-term deal. They did that to Drew Brees 2 years ago. If you're going to do it to Drew Brees, you're going to do it to anybody. And the question the Saints have to ask themselves, more fundamental question, is this how we want to treat our young players who are producing at a high level? What kind of message does it send to the other guys in the locker room when we're going to fight and scratch and claw and wait and wait? I mean, Graham has never said boo about his contract, even as he saw Rob Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez both get long-term contracts from the Patriots after only 2 seasons. It used to be before 2011. If you were drafted, you could get a new contract after 2 years. Gronk and Hernandez, new contracts after 2 years. Graham, still waiting, and still waiting, and still waiting. And he's never complained. He's never done anything. And a lot of people in New Orleans are painting him as greedy. Look, he's being a smart businessman. And the Saints have pressure on them to work this out. And if they blow the initial ruling and it goes $12.3 million for Graham, it's going to be harder to work out a long-term deal.
Mike, I would think from a legal perspective, you're a lawyer, that it would be far more easy to defend Jimmy Graham's side of this because he seems to have the letter of the law on his side. It seems like simple math. Did you or did you not line up at more snaps at tight end or split out wide? It's an easy threshold. It's in the collective bargaining agreement. What is the argument if you're on the Saints side that the spirit of the law makes him a tight end?
Well, now, here's what it is. The CBA says that if you have the franchise tag applied, you get the tender for the position at which you participated in the most plays in the prior year.
Right.
And the swing is the slot. How many times he lined up in the slot, if that's regarded as a receiver, Graham wins. If that's regarded as a tight end, the Saints win. And the argument is, when a tight end lines up in the slot, he's still a tight end. Now, under that argument, you could line a tight end up in the slot 100% of the time, and he'd still be a tight end. And that's why, I assume, Lance Moore, former Saints receiver, slot receiver now at the Steelers, was one of the witnesses who testified in support of Graham's position. And you can point to guys like Hines Ward, Anquan Boldin, a lot of great receivers who have lined up exclusively in the slot or 90% or more of the time in the slot. So, and I think that's one of the ways they're pushing back against this, saying, well, if the Saints are right, they could put Graham in the slot on every snap, and he would never be anything but a tight end. And look, 2 years ago, Brees filed a grievance under a very obscure argument, and I was convinced he was going to lose. It was just a leverage play to get him more leverage on his long-term contract. He filed that grievance. He won. Now, under that kind of loose, hey, Brees won a position that I thought he'd never win. Graham's is a lot stronger than Brees was 2 years ago, and Brees won. So I don't have any reason to sit here and say, oh, there's no way Graham's going to win. I think Graham is the favorite to win this, and I think the Saints are playing with fire because they are going to end up potentially owing him $12.3 million for 1 year.
Mike Florio of ProFootballTalk.com here with us. I know you recently spoke with the NFL's VP of officiating, Dean Blandino, about this face mask issue, which to me seems like a cosmetic thing with the National Football League. We're talking about some of those oversized face masks. If you can picture what Justin Tuck wears, they have more bars. Some guys feel like they're more protected when they wear them. The NFL has given medical waivers for that, but Blandino told you that he feels players may be too likely to initiate head-first contact if they're wearing those supersized face masks, so the NFL is going to be more restrictive on who gets to use them. Mike, is there any empirical data to back that up? Is that just a gut feeling by the NFL, or is this just their excuse that they're using to make sure everybody conforms to their uniform policy?
I'd say probably a little bit of both. And it's funny because you already can't see the face or the head of the guy who's in the uniform. So, I mean, we want them to look robotic, but not too robotic. They can't look completely robotic. They can't have a face mask that removes any semblance or evidence of a human being inside that uniform. Now, and there is a real health reason for some players, but I think some players like how it looks. It creates a false sense of security. There have been people who have argued, I think Lou Holtz is the most recent one to argue this, take off the face mask altogether, and then you won't have players leading with their helmets, and that will help reduce the number of concussions. It won't reduce the number of broken faces, because there's still going to be a lot of inadvertent contact with elbows and knees to unprotected faces. But I think it's a combination of the NFL not wanting these guys to lose all humanity, just 90% of it, and then the idea that there is a safety sense that, you know, guys will be more likely to use their faces as battering rams if they feel like they're never going to get their faces caved in.
Mike, what's the latest with the Buffalo Bills? Do you think in the end that that team winds up staying in Buffalo?
I think it will. I'm intrigued by John Bon Jovi's candidacy. There was a report in the New York Post a couple of weeks ago that he had a two-hour lunch with Roger Goodell, and Bon Jovi was taking copious notes. And unless Goodell was helping out with song lyrics, I can't imagine that it was anything other than how to go about getting this Bills team. And previously, the thinking was that Bon Jovi's group would move the team, or at least try to move the team to Toronto. Now you've got Ron Jaworski, who owned the Philadelphia soul of the AFL with Bon Jovi, saying Bon Jovi was never going to move it, he's not going to move it, and it makes you wonder whether, and I see two possibilities. Bon Jovi has decided that the only way to get the Bills is to commit to Buffalo, or if you are going to move the team at some point in the future, you can't suggest or hint or allow anyone to think you're going to move the team until you move the team, because then you end up having 3, 4, 5 years of just lame duck and turmoil and problems in Buffalo. But I think the team ultimately is going to stay in Buffalo. I think there's going to be too much political pressure on the NFL. There's some powerful politicians in New York. There's no other team headquartered in the state of New York, the Jets and Giants both in Jersey. I think the Bills are going to stay there. Now, I say that knowing full well that when we talk about L.A., we talk about London, we talk about other potential locations, the NFL doesn't want to expand, so somebody's going to move at some point. But I don't think it's in the NFL's interest to move the Bills, and it's definitely not in the NFL's interest to have a team talk about moving before the day comes to load up the Mayflowers like the Colts once did and disappear in the middle of the night.
Hey, Mike, give us your thoughts on Johnny Manziel right now. As Chris Mortensen reported, Jimmy Haslam, the owner of the Browns, wants him to tone it down a little bit. Aren't they getting exactly what they wanted or had to know that they were getting in Manziel when they drafted him?
Absolutely. And publicly, their attitude has been work hard, play harder. Privately, they do want him to tone it down. I think a lot of it is just judgment. Don't pose for these photos and videos that are going to end up on social media. You can go have a good time, but don't stick your mug in the lens of any camera that's out there. And, of course, today, after the word comes out that Haslam wants it to tone it down, I've heard the same thing. They've talked to him, presumably. He knows, presumably, that he's supposed to tone it down. What's he do? He's hanging out with Justin Bieber and Floyd Mayweather in Hollywood last night. So, and he hasn't done anything wrong. But one of the only pieces of wisdom that I try to impart to my son, who doesn't listen to anything I say because he's 17, is we don't really know where the line is in any given case. You have a loose idea of where the line is. Your best approach is to stay away from the line. And I feel like Johnny Manziel is getting too close to that line. And there's going to be a night where one thing leads to another, leads to another, leads to another, and somebody's going to be accusing him of doing something that either did or that he didn't do, but he allowed himself to be in position to be accused of it.
Tony Romo says that he's giving up golf, at least for now, because of the back problems, and that he's going to completely focus on football, which I think some Cowboys fans would probably not react so kindly to that. What have you heard from Cowboys Nation since Tony made those comments?
So his back is fine, and he's going to be able to keep playing football, but he's so concerned about his back that he's not going to play golf, which would presumably put slightly less stress on the back than full contact NFL football. I mean, the concern here is this. Will Tony Romo's next back injury be his last back injury? Will he have to retire at some point? It's one thing to get him healed from his second back surgery in a year. But as Troy Aikman, who retired at the same age, not because of concussions, but because of back problems, he has said multiple times, Romo is getting close to the end of the line here. It is too hard to come back from these. It is too hard to avoid the next one. And if you're concerned about playing golf and that could cause more back problems, how in the world should we not assume that football eventually is going to, at the right time, at the right spot, the right hit, or the wrong twist, that's going to be it for Tony Romo, and the Cowboys are going to regret, well, maybe they won't regret, not drafting Johnny Manziel. After the, I don't know, maybe Jerry Jones would prefer that Manziel hang out with Justin Bieber and do all that stuff. But I think the Cowboys eventually will regret not drafting Manziel if Manziel plays well, because I don't think Romo's got much left.
You get a discount on Bieber tickets, I guess, that comes with it if you're in that position. All right, Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com. Mike, just so you know that Jacksonville has universal positive regard still for you. Got this tweet in when we mentioned you were coming on. We got a request to kick you square in the giblets. So just passing that along to you. Next time I see you, be on the lookout.
I've been very favorable, and you're a big guy too. You would not have to kick very high to get me in the giblets. I've been very favorable to the Jaguars. I talk about how they're a team that could turn it around this year. They could be a surprise. I like where they're going. I like Dave Caldwell. I like Gus Bradley. I mean, that's all right. And I haven't said anything about the Jaguars. I never, you know how you flag the teams when you do a post about a team moving to LA? I never flag the Jaguars for any L.A. or London
They have fallen out of that cycle of stories, which is kind of nice to see. After not just at PFT, but just everywhere in general.
But let me tell you this. I mean, it can't be all positive. If the NFL is ever going to move a team to London, how can it not be the team that has built a fan base there by playing there every year? That's what I would be concerned about if I'm a Jaguars fan. And I don't think they're ever going to move a team to London. I think that's a scam on the people of London to get them engaged in football. I think what we're going to have is the equivalent of Kellogg's little cereal variety pack, where every year it's going to be different teams.
Yeah.
It's going to be 8 games with different teams, and you're going to have a full slate of home games, but there's never going to be a team that moves there. I think there's too many logistical problems. I think the NFL likes to talk about moving to London just to generate more interest in every given year for the games that they're playing there.
Well, you know what? You can make the same argument. I know you have for the last several years for both London and Los Angeles. And if it ever comes to pass, I'm going to call that the Florio plan, because you've been pushing that for a few years.
It's more likely for L.A. than London. I think a team at some point goes to L.A. when everything lines up just right. I can't imagine the NFL working, because here's the problem with London. You would have to give the team in London some benefits, some different rules than what applies to everyone else, salary cap, et cetera. You'd have to change the rules for that team. Well, what if that team does really well then? Then the other 31 teams are going to say you gave them too much of a benefit. I think any time you start applying different rules, different salary cap, different this, different that, to account for a team not being in the contiguous 48 states, you invite turmoil and trouble, especially if that team becomes successful.
Who's coming up on Pro Football Talk Live at noon?
That's a good question. I should be booking my guests instead of talking to you guys.
Get to work. Mike, good to
all
talk
right
to you, buddy. We'll see
thanks,
you.
Thanks, guys.
There he goes. Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, where you can check out Pro Football Talk Live and NBC Sports Network in the afternoons, Pro Football Talk Live, the television version as well. So appreciate Mike stopping by. You want to weigh in on anything he had to say? You're certainly welcome to do that at 641-1010. We've got a lot of issues from around the National Football League we're going to get into today. You want to talk about the United States men's national team going up against Belgium? Want to talk a little Belgium smack? Do you see Beef's tweet, Tony?
No.
A few minutes ago. Oh, check out my timeline. I don't know if he sent it to you as he was talking a little visual smack against the Belgians today, and I appreciated that. Coming back with more Jaguars today, straight ahead on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Yeah. As soon as I heard the first one, I knew where we were headed with this, Tony, because I believe.
Well, I gave you a little bit of a hint
that we will win.
I believe, baby.
Today.
I was just watching hype videos on the break.
That video is nuts.
Oh, my God. Flip the script. Check it out. I just posted it on my timeline.
Flip the script, ladies and gentlemen.
It'll give you chill bumps. It gave me tears in my eyes this morning. It's exciting. Good video.
First one, Cross-Canadian Ragweed, I Believe You.
Have you ever heard of that band?
I have heard of Ragweed, and I'm too old to fool with it.
Some people call them CCR.
Right? When you grow up, your tastes change. And the Monkees, Daydream Believer. We've figured out the theme today.
It's a day for believers.
Well done.
It is a day for believers as well.
Yes, that's true. Well
just
done.
Go to PFT and go look at Manziel. He does, and even Mike points out He says the only possible good news for the Browns is that Manziel seems to have a, quote, oh, crap, I probably shouldn't be doing this look on his face. And he does have a look like, all right, I'm going to take the photo because I just can't say no. But really, I'm going to tweet out a picture of me and Bieber and
the
Floyd
Beans.
Mayweather. That's a weird relationship between Bieber and Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah, what do you think they talk about?
I don't think they talk about much. It was a story about this, like, in ESPN, the magazine. Like, I forget how it is. It's like Floyd Mayweather gives the Biebs access like he has because he has so many followers on Twitter, and he tweets about his pay-per-views. That's, like, his thing. Like, a reporter followed Floyd Mayweather before one of his last fights, and basically, he's ignoring Bieber the whole time. He's hanging out in the suite, you know, like earlier in the afternoon before the fight that night. And then he'll just walk by and he'll be like, yeah, why don't you send a tweet out about that pay-per-view? And that's about the extent of the conversation that they have. So some kind of Machiavellian business relationship
sure.
going on
so
there.
So he gives
Tony.
Him free access to a bunch of stuff in exchange for a bunch of advertising.
He gives him access for advertising. It's scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. It is the way the world works.
If anyone is interested in Floyd Mayweather Jr. pay-per-views, it's 14-year-old girls.
Look, it's whoever follows Bieber, though, right? Hey, mommy and daddy, buy the pay-per-view because Justin said so. If he's got, I don't know, how many followers do you think he has on Twitter?
Bieber?
Yeah. Yeah, million plus, right? Easy, right?
Probably close to two or three.
Two, all right, so if one out of 100 buy it, how many does that work out to be? 10,000 pay-per-views?
52.6 million followers.
52 million. 52 million, Tony. If
that's
one
a
out
lot
of
a, girls.
If one out of 1,000 people that is following him on Twitter buys the pay-per-view because he suggested it. Right? That's a lot of people. I'm not going to try to embarrass myself with the math.
His page is crazy. I just went to Justin Bieber's Twitter page. Not only 52.6 million followers, but he just tweeted out 4 hours ago a picture of me and my team, whatever that means. 17,000 retweets, 21,000 favorites, and that's just down the line with everything that he tweets. 17,000, they just see Bieber retweet. I get it now. Floyd? Brilliant, buddy.
It's pretty smart, right? You just got to put up with that dude. And, you know.
Sure.
Whatever comes with, I don't know what he does. They just hang out and make money. Floyd Money Mayweather. You don't get the nickname Money, Tony, unless you probably know how to make it.
No.
It is funny. Everybody loves Mike Florio. They're sending me all the appreciative tweets.
It's unreal.
Thanks for having him on. And this one from Blair Clarkson. He says, I'll never believe that at MD_1010X, I'll never believe Mike Dempsey actually eats Dandy sandwiches. First of all, spell it right. It's D-A-N-D-E-E, and I've been eating them for like 2 decades, Blair, ever since I worked in a convenience store myself back in my college years.
I have seen him eat a Dandy sandwich.
I eat them all the time. They're delicious. So if you choose to not believe me, you must just think I'm a big fat liar. And
he'll believe by the end of the show.
I believe. Come on. Come on.
Today is the day for believing, not disbelieving.
Be a believer, Blair. All right. I believe Blair Clarkson is a Bieber fanatic. I don't know. Who cares if he is? It doesn't matter to me. Let's get a few phone calls in. Should we tell Randy to shut up? Does he know? Does he know about the hashtag?
I'm not sure if he does. Let's find out.
All right. Let's say hello to Randy, our first caller today. What's going on, Randy? How are you?
Doing well. Thanks, gentlemen. To tell me to shut up, I was just wondering. I mean, what is the possibility of there being, NFL expansion to encompass LA and London?
Oh, NFL expansion to encompass it? I don't think the NFL ever won't expand again. But I think for the foreseeable future, I think it would be a while, Tony. I think you have to be careful not to dilute the product. But if they feel ultimately, you know, it's a bottom line business. If they think it's going to help them ultimately make more money for the greater good, the bottom line, the pool of money they share between the owners and the players, I don't think they'd stop at anything. I think they'd have a 50-team league if they thought that they could populate them with enough good players that people would turn out. I think you reach a point of diminishing returns, though, and I don't think the NFL for the foreseeable future is anywhere close to considering expansion.
No, I tend to agree with you. And I think that from a league perspective, being able to dangle LA over these teams' heads who have stadium issues or that kind of thing. I think it has helped the league to this point to force
intentionally
cities,
or not, right?
I like mean, whether Minnesota, that was the plan or right?
Not.
Minnesota, we're watching it in Buffalo right now with that idea of Toronto being hung over their heads. I think having LA open, look, the NFL is a big enough boy that in the end, if they wanted a franchise to be in LA, there would be a franchise in LA. The NFL has the power to make that kind of thing happen. It hasn't happened yet, I think, for a reason. In part, at least in part, I think that it is, look, you get a new stadium or there's always L.A.
The specter of L.A.
Yeah.
And I don't know what city. Now, you know, like, for instance, if the Buffalo Bills were to relocate to Los Angeles, right? And I'm not trying to be one of these people that they're going to go. I don't think they are, and I don't want them to, other than the fact that it wouldn't be another team we care more about. You know what I mean?
Sure.
If Buffalo went there, well, it'd be good for a lot of small market cities that have teams because no one's ever going to put another franchise in Buffalo. If the St. Louis Rams moved back to Los Angeles, it wouldn't be too many years until we'd start hearing, well, St. Louis now is the vacuum in the middle of the country, and they're, you know, market size number whatever,
right,
and that's the new hole to build.
The NFL has always gone back into the places where it was. To this point, it has, but it's also never left a city as small as Buffalo to really test that theory.
It's not going back to Buffalo.
Right.
It's not going back to Buffalo. I don't believe it. I mean, Cleveland's a lot bigger than Buffalo. They lost the Browns. They had, you know, they had a lot more heritage. I mean, Buffalo has more recent heritage. People remember the 90s, that team that made it to the Super Bowl 4 years in a row. Cleveland used to win NFL championships. Now, granted, it was decades and it was in the pre-Super Bowl era. But that's more than Buffalo.
Sure, you're talking Cleveland, Baltimore, and St. Louis. I mean, those are the places that if they've lost the franchise, they came back.
See, I think Randy thought we were talking about, because he was bringing up the specter of teams relocating, that we were telling him to shut up. No, the Shut Up Randy hashtag, which is not universally understood at this point in time, was Lauren's mom's friend's husband, Randy. I got that right, Lauren, right?
That was very impressive.
Your mom's friend's husband, Randy, who had
Correct.
Some surgery, and his wife was picking him up at the hospital, and he was complaining about the pain he was in, and his wife, as Lauren Brooks is coming on the air for an update, a sports update, proclaimed, "Shut up, Randy. Lauren's on." So that's our kind of our new thing when we
Poor
talk
guy.
About how great Lauren is. We say, "Shut up, Randy." By the way, we got a Belgian smack talk with that incorporates "Shut up, Randy" today. I'm really looking forward
yes,
to
we
that
did.
Later on as we wrap things up later on today.
Wow.
Let's go to David up next here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Hi, David. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. San Diego. When's the last time you saw a Super Bowl in San Diego?
I don't know. I off the top of my head. Why do you ask?
2002, Buccaneers-Raiders, right?
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
All right. Now, why don't the NFL go back to San Diego? It was always in the rotation, if you know,
because
right?
they want them to get a new stadium.
Okay. Now, your two teams that I think that are most likely to move to L.A. If they do build it, would be the Raiders and the Chargers. The Chargers would move instantly if there was a new stadium, and I think they should put two teams in L.A. like you got two teams in New Jersey.
Well, I mean, then maybe they will, but they've had two teams there before, and I think you're right. San Diego and Oakland have probably moved to the top of the list, Tony, in terms of speculation, which is just nice. Kind of like what Mike said earlier. He doesn't hashtag the Jags into those conversations, you know, about teams relocating. They've kind
sure.
of moved off of that spot, which is nice, and nationally that's gotten picked up. The problem with two teams in L.A. is they've had two teams, and what happened? They both left. The L.A. doesn't support one team.
One of them was the Raiders.
That's as much, I think, been stadium issues as anything with the Davis family over the years.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And, look, San Diego's having problems with its stadium. We all know that kind of thing is going on in San Diego right now. And Oakland, look, Jacksonville gets crucified for having put tarps in their stadium. Where's all the talk about Oakland having to do the exact same thing to be able to sell out their home games too? Oakland doesn't get bashed. Why is that team still in that city? I mean, so with L.A. right down the road, if the NFL wanted to move a team, it's going to be the Oakland Raiders or it's going to be the San Diego Chargers. It's that simple.
Right down the road may be a stretch. Oakland to L.A. is quite a distance.
No, I'm saying that Oakland has all the issues that Jacksonville has been supposed to have had.
They're
dysfunctional.
I'm just mocking your general lumping all of California into one small geographical
area. No, it's not.
Like two-thirds of the East Coast.
Yeah.
Long is what it is. All right.
It's closer than Jacksonville.
Look, I agree. The reason they don't do it is because that became the Jacksonville issue first, and that's just the one you're going to default to every
sure.
time. That's just the way it is, be it lazy or anything else. You know, now that's Maurice Jones-Drew's problem, what's going out there.
That's right.
And what's going on in Oakland with the number 21 jersey. We'll get to that later. Why Terry Cousin may have shot a little high in offering up the uniform number 21. And whatever happened, I wore 32 because I wanted to stick it to every team, including my own team, who passed on me in the draft, which always kind of was a little bit curious, but nevertheless. Coming up next, this Dayton football history, including an interesting perspective on rules changes that we were talking about yesterday, that what's old is new again, and I'll explain that coming up. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Don't forget, watch party today, 1010XL watch party out of Culhane's. If you're going to be in the area on Atlantic Boulevard this afternoon, you can watch United States men's national team versus Belgium. Frank Frangie and crew, I believe, will be broadcasting live out there.
I think they're out live for remote.
They're at Palencia.
Oh, they're at Palencia today.
Yeah,
okay.
Prime time is live at Culhane's.
Prime time will be at Culhane's. Frank and the crew will be at Palencia this afternoon. But regardless, you can listen to the game, 92.5 FM, as things get underway at 4 o'clock for the United States men's national team trying to make the round of eight. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you live at Everbank Field on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Oh, this Dayton football history, Tony, is always epic. It is presented by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville this week. We ended up talking a lot about the World League last week. There was some anniversary having to do with the World League last week. Maybe the first game played. Today was the date in 1989 when NFL owners voted unanimously to form the World League of American Football. So I was looking for an angle to discuss on it that we didn't cover last week.
Okay.
We did a pop quiz on the World League and all that exciting stuff that that came with it. But their overtime rules back in the mid-90s were strikingly similar to what we see today in the National Football League. You know, the National Football League sometimes seems like it changes its rules at a glacial pace unless it has to do with player safety over the last few years.
Not the NFL.
Yes, the NFL. The NFL now, of course, you know, for years had sudden death overtime. First to score, ended the game. Well, the World League back in the 90s instituted the everybody must get a possession overtime, but unlike the NFL's rules now, where if you score a touchdown on the opening drive, it's over with. Back then, you could score a touchdown, and the other team got a chance regardless, and they played 10 minutes. Despite that, despite the fact that you could counter any scoring play on the opening drive, only two NFL Europe games ever ended in a tie in that period of time.
Huh.
So it kind of interesting. And also, I was looking at it back then. They were talking about the TV contracts and what networks it was broadcast on back in the day. I thought this was odd. Diana Nyad, the distance swimmer, you know, the woman who swims from like Cuba to the Keys without a shark cage. You know what I'm talking about, right? Diana Nyad. She's always trying to set some distance swimming mark for her age group, right? She was the studio host.
That's weird.
For NFL Europe on TV, like the pregame and halftime studio host, Diana Nyad, swimmer. I don't know.
Is it the same Diana Nyad?
I'm pretty sure it was the same Diana Nyad. I'm guessing. Is there another more football versed Diana Nyad that I'm forgetting?
I don't know.
I don't either. But it got me thinking, is there a comparable? Now, I wouldn't say she exactly became famous for her work with the World League of American Football. But can you think, who is the example, if there is one, of the most prominent athlete who became a commentator in a different sport? Like, I can think of a guy like Pat Summerall, who was, you know, an NFL, a guy who cut his teeth in the National Football League and became known for, among other things, his work doing golf, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he and John Madden were the voice of the National Football League in a lot of people's minds for the longest time. He wasn't, if you said Pat Summerall, I wouldn't think to some people, they would think golf, but they were probably more golf fans than they were football fans. Can you think of a guy, and I'm not saying there aren't, there may be tons of guys, and I'm just thinking of them off the top of my head, who was like a great baseball player who went on to be a basketball broadcaster or something of that ilk.
I can't think of anyone like that. I mean, I can think of athletes that have broken out of sports and become, you know, something bigger than just whatever sport they were. I mean, Michael Strahan is on, you know, the Good Morning America or whatever, essentially.
Right.
That's a pretty big deal. That's a guy breaking out of the football mold, but it's not exactly long-distance...
Merlin Olsen was on Little House on the Prairie.
It's not exactly a long-distance swimmer becoming the host for a football show.
No.
That's weird. That would be like John McEnroe doing baseball. Why?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, like, I mean, why? Maybe he'd have a great knowledge. I mean, why can Bob Costas do all these different things? He didn't play all these different things necessarily, but
right.
If you've got a guy associated or a woman associated with one sport in particular, you would think that's their area of expertise.
Sure.
And I'm sure Diana Nyan, I'm assuming, has done plenty of swimming play-by-play or analysis over the years, I would think.
I would think. It would be like Michael Phelps showing up and being like a studio host for like Fox Sports baseball show.
Yes, that's
I mean, that's essentially what this is.
Right.
That's weird.
It is weird. And so I'll put a T-shirt bounty on the line. If somebody can come up with one person that we will go, that Tony and I will agree, that's a good example of that. First person who gives us an example of that, you can call it in at 641-1010 or tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and give us a person who made it big in one sport, who went on to great fame, or their primary broadcasting gig was in another sport. I'm not saying Diana Nyad went on to great fame as the World League studio host. I just find it interesting that she was even in that position to begin with. This date in football history brought to you by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. Their mission is to fabricate and install the highest quality product at a competitive price while providing you unsurpassed customer service. You know, fencing is an investment in your home, in your property, in your place of business. Your family's going to feel protected. You're going to breathe easier knowing that Best Fence installed your new fence. They provide a professional free estimate at your convenience if you call them at 268-1638 or visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. It is amusing to me how many people think that Mike Florio hates Jacksonville. I've talked with Mike about this for years. Literally, this topic has come up because it happens in almost every NFL city. Almost every NFL fan base is convinced that Florio hates them, which is probably a sign that he's doing his job at least even-handedly, if not fairly. I think he's an equal opportunity offender, is what it is. Mike is a snarky guy, which I appreciate, and there's a comedic aspect to a lot of, particularly the old school stuff he did in the Pro Football Talk rumor mill when they were a little, in the pre-NBC days, you know, when they were a little more wild, wild west on what was going on out there. But somebody said, tell Mike to lay out the hate on Jacksonville, and also that he looks like George Stephanopoulos. And I just said, you know, give me some examples that I hate. He said for years he would talk about the Jags moving based on rumors, and he hates on the crowds at Everbank. See, the word
it's a
hate,
rumor mill, first of all.
Right, where you're going to traffic in rumors.
Yeah, he's not saying that any of these things are necessarily facts. This is what he's heard. Scuttlebutt.
If I looked at Oakland, for instance, and said, boy, those tarps are unsightly in Oakland, if they're covering up some of those seats, and that's the way I felt if I was in Milwaukee, comment, does that mean I hate the Oakland Raiders? I mean, that's to me where people think it's like a personal goal, like I'm the person is going to set out to look for reasons to bring that city or franchise into disrepute. I just think it's comical to me, because I've known Mike now going on, I don't know, maybe 8 years, something like that, and trust me, in my opinion, couldn't be further from the truth, but to each your own. And he is certainly a lightning rod that gets people fired up.
There's no doubt.
Over a number of issues. All right, we got a bunch of people on the line. Let's see if they've got, I said first one in. That gives us
a convincing one. I got one on Twitter.
All right, well, hold that thought for a second. Let's go to Wade at 641-1010. Wade, how are you?
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
We're great. Give us an example of somebody who made it big in one sport and became more famous for broadcasting another one or something of that ilk.
Well, I'm trying to think of Robin Roberts. Didn't she play basketball and then do college football?
Well, Robin Roberts, I don't know her background. I'm assuming it was as a college basketball player. I think you're correct. But at first, before she did that, didn't she become more of like an all-sports person as an anchor on SportsCenter and doing some of their news magazines and stuff like that. And obviously she's gone on to work with Good Morning America. Or am I wrong about that? The timing.
I believe you're correct.
Yeah. I put it this way. I'm assuming you're right that Robin Roberts, has done some football. I don't know if I've ever watched Robin Roberts do a football game. Have you seen Robin Roberts do a football game, Tony?
Yes.
Have you?
I
don't think I ever have. I don't put it this way. I wouldn't think of course, I wouldn't think of Diana Nyad doing the World League.
No.
We'll put that in as entry number one, and we'll see if we can top it, Wade. We appreciate it. Let's go to Mike up next here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL. Hi, Mike. How are you?
Hey, great. How are you?
Good, man. What do you got? You got an example for us?
Yeah, Ahmad Rashad.
Okay, doing NBA stuff, right?
Yeah, going from the Vikings to doing the NBA stuff.
But did and again, that's a pretty good example right there, because I'm assuming Diana Nyad had done other sports commentating, primarily, I would assume, swimming. Before
right.
she ever did World League stuff. Ahmad Bradshaw did a lot of football stuff, Tony, but now he's like, what's that NBA show he hosts on Saturday? Do you still do that one? You know, the one...
I don't know if Rashad still does that or not.
That, the one on NBC did kind of with the angle for kids. That's a pretty good one, Mike. Hang on the line. Let Lauren get your phone number. That's the leader in the clubhouse right now, I would say. What's the one you got on Twitter?
We got from the Shermanator on Twitter, Brad Doherty, the UNC basketball player, played in the NBA, now does NASCAR.
He does do NASCAR. He became an owner of, what was he, like a dragster owner or something like that?
Something like that,
he was
yeah.
like a car owner. I don't want to say he was not on like the NASCAR Cup Series, but something on a smaller level, and that is a pretty good one.
And from Jerry, we got smaller scale, but Terry Gannon, golf announcer, was a starter for the NC State basketball team.
Okay, that is smaller scale. Let's get Chad on next here on 1010XL. How you doing, Chad? Oh, let's go to Bill instead. All right, Bill fell off as well. Boy, Doherty, Ahmad Rashad, I'll tell you what, we'll put our brain power together on that one. It won't take us long. They may each deserve a T-shirt as far as that goes. Tony, I've got the most overpaid and underpaid players from 2013 in the National Football League. We'll take a look at that. Plus,
you're going to take great delight in this list based on what I saw at the top of it already.
Worst quarterback in New York tops the list. And Jameis Winston takes out an insurance policy designed to pay him $8 to $10 million should he slide out of the first round of whatever year's NFL draft, I presume, that he enters due to injury or illness. We'll discuss the impact of that. If you've got another one, another suggestion, the Brad Doherty, Ahmad Rashad.
Really quick.
Wayne, what do you get?
From Irish Jaguar, and this one's pretty good. Jonathan Coachman is now a host on ESPN after making his bones in the WWE. Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't do it like, he's not like the host of a specific sport.
No, but he does ESPN Radio now.
Right,
he
but
hosts
I'm saying,
SportsCenter.
But if he were like, you know, doing Monday Night Football and he came from a wrestling background, I'd give it a little bit more credence. I think Doherty and Ahmad Rashad are stronger examples of that right now. All right, let's take a timeout. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you live at EverBank Jaguars today. You want to get in? 641-1010, as always, most over and underpaid professional football players. Who are they? We'll tell you one man's opinion coming up next on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Let's keep believing, Tony.
Believe, baby!
He's getting more fired up as the afternoon goes along.
I am.
Of the morning.
I still haven't stopped moving.
Did I really hear, I heard Dan and Jeff talking about, is it really 3-hour time difference in Rio de Janeiro?
It must, there's some kind of time difference because by the time they went to like kickoff at 6 o'clock, it was dark down there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's not the tropical canopy of the rainforest that was blotting out the sun.
At least wherever their studio is, it was always dark by the time they were kicking off those 6 o'clock games.
Americans noted for our mastery of geography.
Yes.
He says sarcastically. It appears to me.
I know Brazil is south.
I don't know, playing the game of Risk, that if you draw a line from Florida to Brazil, it's fairly in the same time zone.
Apparently not.
Ish.
I bet they have part of Brazil that is in the same time zone-ish. It's a big country. But Rio, if it's over on the East Coast, it may be out there.
All right. What time is it in Brazil? Let's type that in. Google will answer all your queries, and we will get that. The current local time in Brazil, Tony, Once this link that I clicked on at timeanddate.com jumps in, will tell me, where the hell is it?
Oh, it says just an hour. Rio is, at least.
Yeah, that makes much more sense. I heard them talking about 3 hours. That doesn't make any sense, whatsoever. But, I don't know. Where are we? 1 hour ahead of Jacksonville. Yeah, that's it. That makes much more sense.
Yeah.
Looked like a semi-straight shot right down the old time zone globe. That we all pay attention to. Brad Daugherty, Ahmad Rashad, two pretty good nominations.
Yeah, that ain't bad.
People that made their bones playing one sport and became, you know, famous or did a lot of broadcasting work in another sport. Brad Daugherty, according to at least Twitter, which is always reliable, our buddy at WAS Racing said that he owns the number 47 car in the Cup Series now, but he's worked his way up. I think he was like a dragster owner or something along those lines, maybe the Truck Series, and he's kind of worked his way up. Brad Daugherty is just a good old boy, is what he is, and so that's a very good one. Ahmad Rashad certainly, probably there's probably a generation of NBA fans that have no idea that he played in the National Football League or that he was married to Mrs. Cosby. As well, from the Cosby Show, Felicia Rashad. Let's get back to the phone lines here and clear up this whole issue. Let's go to, where am I at? How about John, next up on Jaguars Today. Hi, John, how are you?
Hey, good morning. How are you guys?
Good morning.
Hey, how about something with a little local flavor? How about Loggeman?
Being the outdoorsman broadcaster?
Yeah, he's got a good show. He's actually really good at what he does.
Oh, he's got a great show. Jeff's fantastic at what he does. And I'm not saying I'm thinking more along the lines of like a competitive sport. Not that, you know, hunting and outdoorsman type stuff, fishing. I'm not saying they're not sports. Certainly there are tons of fishing tournaments, stuff like that.
Yeah, the Bassmaster tournament.
No, I got you. I just think to me, that's more of a lifestyle show than it is. You know what I mean?
Okay. Yes, sir. I was just trying to throw something.
No, that's thinking outside the box, brother. We appreciate that, John. Thank you very much. I concur with you. Jeff Loggeman is very good at what he does. As a matter of fact, we look forward once the season rolls around. I'm not sure when the exact start date will be, but Jeff will be joining us as one of our revolving co-hosts on a weekly basis. You'll get him every week here on Jaguars Today, likely Tuesday, the players' day off after. Jeff gets Monday to kind of break down the film. We'll take you from a radio perspective inside the film room as much as that can make sense. And Jeff will highlight some of the things that he saw watching the game tape. Let's get David up next here on 1010XL. Hey, David, how are you?
How are you doing, sir?
What's up, buddy?
All right. I'm thinking James Brown. He played basketball at Harvard, but everybody knows him from the NFL.
Oh, did he play basketball at Harvard? Is that what he... Yeah, I think that would be a pretty good example of a guy.
Yep.
See, to me, it's more blatant with the other guys. Just for me personally, I know what they played, and that may be unfair, but
sure.
I'm the guy who's kind of the filter here. But I did not realize that JB played basketball at Harvard. I
didn't either.
Yeah, I probably
I always thought it was a basketball player. I played football.
A football player. Okay. Yeah. All right. How did you find that out?
I actually looking at the show one day, they mentioned it, and I was like, wow, this guy plays basketball because he's a big guy now.
Yeah, he is a big guy.
But he actually played basketball. I think they were ragging him about something.
Maybe his Oliver Miller-like physique. I don't know. But, all right, hey, we appreciate that one, Dave. By the way, Lauren points out Brazil's in winter right now.
Yeah, I'm getting a lot of tweets about that.
That may be why it's getting darker earlier.
I can't. I responded to one of the guys who tweeted me too. I was like, with what's going on outside every day, I can't imagine winter happening anywhere. I mean, it's just because it is blazing.
It's pretty toasty right
every day.
It's pretty toasty right now.
But yeah, it is winter down there, so
that may explain
those
things.
Poor Brazilians in winter.
When Jeff said 3 hours, and maybe he was saying it off the top of his head, I thought that doesn't sound right to me.
Where
are they, in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean?
How miserable does a winter sound where yesterday or this weekend they had a game where the heat index was like 104?
Yeah, what's up with summer in Brazil?
Holy cow!
By the way, yeah,
that's miserable.
I guess that's one of your hotter countries out there.
Ugh.
Qatar. Everyone's said back calling it Qatar. Have you noticed this, by the way?
I always thought it was Qatar.
We were told when they got the World Cup that it was Qatar. that Q-A-T-A-R was pronounced Cutter. I have no idea. They're probably bribing people to say the name the way they want to do it anyway, because that's pretty much how the whole sport operates at that level. But, you know, they're the next World Cup, right? They're 4 years from now.
Yep.
Is Qatar. And there's been talk about playing it during winter, and being in the Northern Hemisphere, winter would coincide with our winter.
That's a bad idea.
Yeah, let's put it on against the National Football League. Yeah, that'll continue to grow soccer in the United States of America. Not that that's necessarily FIFA's main objective, but I would think that's a pretty big objective for FIFA, is to grow it in this country.
The amount of tickets that get bought for the World Cup, wherever it happens to be every year out of the United States, they might want to reconsider that idea. I mean, the second or third most tickets every single World Cup is bought by this country. And whether that's because we're a nation of immigrants who happen to come here loving the game or whatever it happens to be, there are a lot of people who care about the game in the United States. It would be a terrible idea to try to run it up head-to-head with the NFL.
Someone suggested Gus Johnson, Tony, who played college baseball, apparently. He calls a lot of sports.
Your favorite.
Probably known more for football.
Mike loves Gus.
Gus Johnson, to me, is a basketball commentator. More than football commentary. He does a lot of stuff. He does soccer now.
Yeah,
too.
He does the Champions League stuff.
With a lot
Premier
of feigned enthusiasm.
He's quite contained, actually, compared to what he was doing basketball and football and all that stuff.
He needs to be. In a sport that has the equivalent of one touchdown a game.
Well, and in soccer, where it's pretty clear you're allowed to go absolutely bananas when a goal is scored, which fits Gus quite well.
Yes. How does it sound when a goal is scored?
You want it again?
I don't know. You don't have to if you don't want to. How about if the United States wins, I get one of those for each goal they score today.
Oh, you got it.
All right? That doesn't include PKs being broken up individually, but you can if you want to. Andres Cantor.
I used to have my favorite little soundbite I ever put together. I used to have one where it might have been Cantor that did it, but he did the It was like 14 seconds long. It was awesome. But he started with that goal. I loved it. Loved it.
I thought we weren't going to get one out of you today. That's kind of a bonus. This one from JB Jags on Twitter, John Bridges, said, how about Chris Collinsworth? What does Collinsworth broadcast that I'm unaware of? Does he do something that I'm unaware of other than football? Because he was a football player.
Not that I know of.
Does Sunday Night Football? Am I missing something? Maybe I am.
Unless he's working like at the Olympics or something, and I'm not aware of it.
Oh, I don't know. I mean that. I mean, to me, if you work like something like the Olympics, you're doing a broad spectrum of a whole lot of different stuff. Diana Nyad was a women's long distance swimmer who was hired to be the studio host of European football. It would just that to me just seems so far out of left field.
Yeah,
I guess.
And by we're being corrected, and they are right. Russia has the 2018 World Cup.
Oh, okay. Well, that's why I asked you. By the way, keep in mind that I cleared that through the office.
We
got to
go through the
soccer
big Bears.
Info.
Nightmare
Tony
Bear.
Smith.
We revisit Nightmare Bear in 4 years.
Yeah, and you know, back and I can predict in about 3.5 years from now we'll get a wave of articles about how big soccer is becoming in the United States of America.
Whatever, you don't have to care the whole time. I'll
I'm
care.
Not saying
I will care enough for both
are
of us.
Are you kidding me? I'll be on the edge of my seat for the next 3.5 years, wondering if we're going to qualify for the World Cup in Russia, and can Klinsmann do it again? So, don't you
get him, Jürgen.
Suggest for a minute. I'm going to go with Doherty and Ahmad Rashad as both winners there.
I will.
And we'll close
That's
the
good.
Book on that and move on. Let's take a look quickly, Tony. Most overpaid, underpaid players in the National Football League. This guy, Nathan Janke, writes for Pro Football Focus. They love to crunch the numbers. You can take them for what they're, you know, what you feel about them if you're aware of them. They do statistical analysis, try to put a value on what a player meant to his team, how they use it to compare players across positions, within their own positions, and they base everything on statistical metrics, basically. So they've come up with cash values of what their players, these various players, meant and what they're actually paid, and mm-hmm. they come up with the biggest discrepancies, both over and underpaid, as you pointed out. I would enjoy the number one overpaid guy, Eli Manning, this is based on his cap number, by the way. Cap number doesn't always tell the story, okay? Cap number is not necessarily the check you're cashing, but his cap number last year, $20.8 million, his actual value, $5.4 million. I'm surprised his actual value was $5.4 million last year, to be honest with you.
It was the worst year of his career. It's not even close.
Is it just that quarterbacks are valued that much because of the position they play? Because he was terrible last year. He had the second worst accuracy among starting quarterbacks, 27 interceptions. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense that he's worth $5.5 million. But nevertheless, $15 million overpaid. James Laurinaitis, $12.4 million cap hit. And his value was about $1.3 million. Boy, $12.4 million cap hit for an inside linebacker.
Man.
Seems like some good money. David Harris of the Jets, overpaid by about $11 million. Matt Schaub. Now, here's what. That makes sense. His value last year, $800,000. Now, he was drastically worse than even Eli Manning.
Well, he was throwing games away.
He was throwing pick six, game ending, or, you know, game losing. Pick sixes, basically, on a weekly basis for a stretch there. And obviously didn't play the entirety of the season, played about half the year. So his value less than $1 million. His cap hit, 10.8. Roddy White, that's due to injury more than anything. Roddy White's value was 800,000 last year. Didn't play in 100% of the games and was slowed by injury all year long, but felt like he had to play through it because they were already short Julio Jones last year.
Yeah.
Deshaun Goldson, overpaid by about $8 million. Safety with an $8.7 million cap figure. Hey, look, I guess the cap goes up. Somebody's got to get that money. Jonathan Joseph of the Texans, overpaid by $8 million. Adrian Peterson, overpaid by $7.5 million. His actual value, 6.5. His cap number, nearly $14 million. It's interesting looking at Maurice Jones-Drew, that, uniform number flap. Mm-hmm. I know you saw the story.
Yeah.
He's gonna wear number 21 in Oakland. And the story came out yesterday. He told the Oakland media that when he was in Jacksonville his rookie year, Terry Cousin had the number 21, which he wore, I guess, throughout his football career up until that point. And he said, hey, what can I do to get the number 21 from you? He says, oh, we'll work something out. And he said, I was thinking, oh, you know, like a dinner or something like that, or, you know, a small cash payment. And then Terry Cousin turns around and says, I want $200,000. For the number. And he said, forget it. I'm not paying $200,000. And keep in mind, you're working on a rookie deal. $200,000 was a big chunk of what Maurice Jones-Drew was making back then. But, Tony, I thought the narrative was always he chose 32 right from the get-go because, you know, 32 teams, including the Jaguars, passed on their first opportunity to draft him. And he was going to wear that as a badge of honor, let that burn into his psyche. Perhaps... that was a bit of a fabrication, or was that just the, you know, in part true when he couldn't get 21? It just seems like there's a lot that comes out down the line. Like, Maurice's a funny cat, and I've worked very closely with him for 4 years, but he's gonna tell you that he's upset that people are doubting his ability to return to top form, yet he himself said he doubted his ability to return to top form.
Right.
And whether he had the drive or not, wasn't even sure if he had the drive to continue playing until he worked out this offseason. So I guess it's all right for him to question, but it's not all right for any other sane observer who's seen his play diminish with their own eyes to question whether or not he still has it in the cutthroat world of the NFL at a position that historically shows a downturn as you reach age 30 faster than almost any other.
Well, it certainly is more dramatic if you're saying I was considering retiring and didn't know if I had it anymore, and here I am, Oakland, gonna lead the charge for these Oakland Raiders. That is a more dramatic storyline than Jacksonville was done with me because I've been hurt for 2 years. Like, it's a different way to paint that picture for Maurice Jones-Drew.
My man loves to self-motivate and come up with these boogeymen of someone's out to get me, somebody hates me, somebody is not giving me my proper respect. And look, I guess if that's what drives you, it's what drives you. It makes it hard, though, for me to take him seriously when he, you know, weighs in on these kind of things. It seems like a lot of internal hype to get himself motivated to play. And the Adrian Peterson connection with it, I looked up, you know, what would it have cost Maurice Jones-Drew to switch his number after his rookie year when Terry Cousin was no longer a member of the Jacksonville Jaguars? And there's a story from 2012, Adrian Peterson wanted to switch his number to 23 from 28, and this was the year that they were going from Reebok to Nike jerseys. And he figured, well, I'm not going to owe Reebok anything. They're no longer the official team. He said, au contraire, $1 million. is what the estimate was that he would have to pay for the unsold jerseys. Now, there aren't as many at the time Maurice Jones-Drew jerseys in circulation after one season in the league like there were Adrian Peterson jerseys in 2012. But Peterson's point was, from my end, everybody gets a cut of their jersey sales. He says he never made more than 10 grand in a season. He had a top 10 jersey. So no player was getting rich off of jersey sales. All the guys in the top 10 are pretty much prominent players anyway, probably have big contracts. 10 grand to them is not nothing, but it's not something that's life-changing money by any circumstance. He's like, Mick, I'm making 10 grand off this. I'm the one who wears the number, who makes it popular, and I got to pay $1 million to switch my uniform number. And
it's crazy.
As you understand, Adrian Peterson still wears number 28. But I found that interesting nonetheless. So I guess changing teams is your big opportunity to do it without paying the uniform makers. Coming back next, we'll take a look at some of your pro-USA, anti-Belgium smack talk that we requested today in the fan feedback spotlight. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony's Jaguars Today, live from Everbank Field on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Joe Fortunato's bobbing his head right now, Tony, because he believes in love, and he believes in the United States men's national team, and he loves the United States men's national team, so it's like three of the greatest things ever.
I know.
All together.
And he loves Huey Lewis.
He does love Huey Lewis. I believe he called him the best songwriter since McCartney a few minutes ago, or that may have been me mocking Huey Lewis. I'm not sure. One of the two. Although, who didn't have the album Sports and play it over and over and over again? I don't believe this was on that album back in the day.
I don't know. I like Huey Lewis. I've never owned any
Columbia
Huey
Record
Lewis
and Tape
albums.
Club. Blah!
I know Huey Lewis most for the band's prominent featuring in American Psycho, honestly.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's a good point. That's very, very well played
but
by
I
you.
But I do like Huey Lewis.
I was in the living room yesterday at my humble abode, and we have like a rack of like cassette tapes. Like, I don't know the last time I played a cassette tape. I don't know if my cassette tape deck works at the house, but I had a Maxell 120-minute tape unopened. Do those things go bad? Other than the fact that
you find out?
In a few years there'll be no technology that can use them. I don't know. I'm just saying it's unopened. I haven't opened it. I would assume it's not bad, although, you know, like you can erase a tape if you... I don't know if the tape itself would deteriorate if it hasn't been used. I would think it would be fine.
Do you think they'll make comebacks like records have?
No.
No.
Records are just from, you know, hipsters who want to be like, hey, look at me and my vinyl, man. I mean, seriously.
A lot of my friends collect records.
Right.
I know.
Well, if you're collecting them, like you collect stamps.
Yeah, they're not hipsters.
You know, I'm going to put on this vinyl because all these pops and hisses make it sound so much better.
I have a bunch of
it's more authentic that way.
I have a bunch of vinyl too, but it's because I don't want to rebuy the album. Like,
that's fine. Look,
that's
my wife,
honestly,
we have
why
tons
I have
of
it.
Vinyl at the house, but it's not like, I mean, this, oh, it just sounds
hey,
better.
Man, it sounds
on the
authentic,
vinyl, man.
This is the way they
really
meant it
to
no, be
it actually
to.
Sounds better in the digitally remastered version they just released. Sorry, that's how it sounds better. By the way, way off on where the hell Brazil is.
I know.
Not even close to a straight line.
Florida's above Peru and Chile.
You should have asked me to draw the map and seeing where I stuck Brazil before I mean, because it is almost in the middle of the damn Atlantic Ocean, is it not? According to the one map that somebody tweeted us very helpfully.
Maps never lie.
Crazy curved globe.
Kevin Craig at KCraig18 straightened me out. He said, basically, yes, Rio is the equivalent of the middle of the Atlantic Ocean from us. So,
how is it only an hour?
I look at this now, and that's the question, Tony. How the hell is it only an hour
that's
time
a
difference?
Big time zone.
In Sao Paulo, Brazil. I don't know. Sao Paulo. I don't know how you say it.
Sao Paulo.
I don't know.
Sao Paulo.
That's how I pronounce it.
Sao Paulo.
I guess that's going to be an issue if I ever travel to Brazil. I'll be
excuse
mocked.
Excuse me, sir. Where is Sao Paulo?
I don't know how you say it. Excuse me.
You were close enough.
We got a tourist.
I used to get laughed at. I got laughed at once for saying Regina, Canada.
And you know it's Regina.
It's Regina. Right.
I might have
you look at it and you're like, it looks like Regina to me. Can I tell you? I'm an American. Just beat Belgium.
I talked to someone on the phone one time from Regina, Canada, and I couldn't stop laughing.
I'm glad you said that.
I really couldn't.
Today, in the fan feedback spotlight, the Tom Bush family of dealerships asked you to talk some serious Belgian smack today. Tony, I don't know if we got a copious amount of offerings, but we got some interesting ones in
there. No, we did. From Bubba Gump, we got, hey, Belgium.
Bubba.
Your waffles suck. Hashtag bacon and eggs. Hashtag can't find you on a map. Hashtag I believe. Hashtag Bud Light. Hashtag Jaguars today. So giving us a
attaboy
to his plans today as well.
I thought hashtag bacon and eggs was pretty clever.
Bacon and
actually.
Eggs is pretty good. From Eric, we got the name Randall came from the Normans who settled France. French is the language of Belgium, ergo, hashtag shut up, Randy.
That was fantastic.
That's pretty good.
And he included, he went on to carry over into his next tweet where he threw the hashtag Jaguars today.
Yes, he did.
The limits of 140 characters, Tony.
And from Bold City Batman, better hope Dr. Evil lets you use his time machine after we bust that ass today.
We bust that Belgian ass today.
Of course, from Beef, we got the waffle that had been defecated
covered
upon.
In dookie. That I'm pretty sure was one of those novelty store dumps that you can buy. Is that what they call that when they scan the out of stock barcode?
Yes,
I believe
that's what
shows up on their machine, novelty store dump. And you place that on a Belgian waffle.
Well played, Beef.
And Beef has earned himself a Jaguars Today t-shirt.
Way to go.
We'll save one for Mini Beef.
He's finally in the club.
Does Mini Beef have a name yet, by the way, other than all the affectionate terms like brisket that we refer to Mini Beef as?
I have not heard about a name yet.
Sirloin tip? I don't know. What? I'm trying to think of a small bite-sized morsel. But nevertheless, let me see. Facebook, we got a little smack talk here as well. Okay, Belgium, it's on. I haven't read this through, so I certainly hope I'm not in for my anchorman moment right here. The U.S. is known for power and strength, and that's what you're going to see today, Belgium. You are flat and fluffy, full of holes. We're going to butter you up, slow you down with that sweet, sticky stuff. That's right, Belgium. We're going to waffle you. Go USA. See, I was worried there for a second, but that was headed. Thank you, Glenn Parrish. David Phillips today says, after today, the Belgian team can go back to making waffles, chocolate, and beer. Hashtag Jaguars today. Hashtag extra syrup, please. By the way, gorgeous country, if the pictures are any indication. Of course, if you put nothing but pictures of Yellowstone National Park in your Google search of the
United
States
of
America.
And Hawaii and Alaska.
Right. You're like, damn. Breathtaking scenery at every
turn.
Let's
leave Alabama and Mississippi out of this.
Oh, my. He just threw half the Southeastern Conference under the bus right there. Or
it's
close,
not the area
close to
of the
a third,
country
anyway.
You're going to show off.
Probably not.
No.
Probably not. Or just endless ribbons of interstate highway, although to some people that spells freedom, Tony.
Mm.
That's freedom, coast to coast.
I did.
I'm not showing my papers to anybody.
Someone sent me a picture today of Clint Dempsey haven't scored that goal, and it said, every kick in America is a free kick.
That's pretty good, too. That's really good. I got to admit, there's been some clever soccer Twitter stuff that's come down the line. All right, now the fan feedback spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush Family Dealerships, which includes Tom Bush Volkswagen, Tom Bush Mazda, Tom Bush BMW, and Tom Bush Mini. You can visit TomBush.com for more information when you're in the market for your next new or pre-owned vehicle, and follow them on Twitter at Tom Bush Motors as well. Mike Borquin at Kayak Fish sent me a picture of the restaurant Dempsey's at Camden Yards. I did get called Rick Dempsey last week. Who called me Rick Dempsey last week?
That was Spencer.
It was Spencer Balls
AKA
Davis.
Balls Davis.
Refer to me as Rick Dempsey. I'll take Clint Dempsey would seem more topical right now. Never got to the underpaid players, Tony. Can you guess who tops the list, or did you already read the list?
I have not looked at the list. Give me
your best guess at who tops the list.
Based on where they are on their contracts, I would say a guy like Russell Wilson.
Russell Wilson was a cap hit of $700,000 last year and was worth $15.5 million. How can the guy who wins the Super Bowl be worth only three times Eli Manning? You know what I mean? I'm not trying to pick. You know,
no,
like,
I
a guy
know
throws 27 interceptions would seem like you're, I don't know, infinitely more valuable than that guy if you are Russell Wilson. Which, by the way, just so you know, not everybody at ESPN is 100% on top of things. The title of these stories, NFL's 10 Most Underpaid Players, Super Bowl MVP Russell Wilson tops the list of biggest bargains. Problem with that is Malcolm Smith is holding that MVP trophy, not Russell Wilson. But good try by the four-letter network. So that's going to do it. All right, the boys are going to be out of Culhane's, Tony. It's soccer fever. It's soccer madness. It has gripped the United States of America from coast to coast
and
out to Hawaii and the territories and the Virgin Islands and Guam. We're
it's been
all
fun today.
Crazy.
I mean, I'm following along on Twitter, and I'm watching all these major league ballparks that are saying they're showing the game on the Jumbotron before first pitch tonight. So they're inviting the fans to come out early and enjoy the U.S. men's team and then whatever baseball game in all these parks. I know the Nationals are doing it. The Braves are opening up the stadium today. Look, this is, like I said, this is a day for believers. An opportunity to get into the quarterfinals of the World Cup, a place where the USA has only been two times before. This is awesome. And it's really exciting. Like I said, today is a fun, nervous energy as compared to what I was feeling last Thursday. I'm really pumped up.
XL Primetime Live at Culhane's. Frank and the boys live at Palencia this afternoon. 1010 XL Watch Party at Culhane's at 4 o'clock. And you can catch a game on 92.5 FM. If you're in your car or you just prefer the radio broadcast, that's where you're going to find it, 92.5 FM with full in-depth analysis on 1010 on the AM dial. And just think now, book your seat. 4 years from now, we'll have a big watch party on the world's largest outdoor video boards here for World Cup 2018. Looking forward to it, Tony.
Yeah, baby.
The 3.5 years that will pass between now and
qualifying.
I'm going to be devastated if we don't qualify now that I've got a plan for where to be for World Cup 2018 on the world's largest outdoor video boards. All right, that does it for us today. Thanks to Mike Florio from ProFootballTalk.com for continuing to stir the pot and convincing half the populace that he hates you here in Jacksonville. I get a chuckle out of that. For Joe Fortunato, for Lauren Brooks, we bid you adieu. Lauren, you went with the patriotic fingernails last week. Didn't work so well versus Germany. What do we got today for the fingers and toes?
Today we have silver for the fingers and red for the toes. And as I talked to you this morning, you described it as it sounded like a white trash Christmas tree.
I did.
So let's hope that that is not the reviews that I get for the rest of the day.
Which, by the way, if anyone knows the story of my thing with Christmas, is I used to joke to my mother-in-law that I, because she's such a traditionalist, you know, they chop down a tree fresh every year and they've got all these fancy ornaments had collected over 40 years or whatever. I said, just give me an artificial silver tree with nothing but gaudy red balls on it. And she'd always be, oh, this is the worst thing in the world. So as I got busier and we couldn't always go and travel to North Carolina for Christmas, that's exactly what we have at my house every year. And it's not only that, it's a mini tree. It's like a foot and a half high. And it's silver with gaudy red balls on it.
This year you'll need a USA ornament.
That's right. Just remember, my tree will be full red, white, and blue this year. And just remember, Christmas is not about the tree, ladies and gentlemen. There's your little July 1st wisdom. That does it for us. XL Primetime is next. Joe C., Hacker, T-Wig, live at Culhane's. We'll talk to you tomorrow right here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Go USA!